Welcome back. Bill Russell was asking of Susan Faludi about the two halves of her book. You articulated the first and then told me in the break, the second being misogyny and myth, that being the other half of the terror dream.
Which I think, my guess is you have been savaged. I know what the New York Times, which I don't hold in particularly high regard, had to say about this book. But I would assume that there are a lot of people have gone after you, particularly, really for both of them, but in many ways, I think they probably attacked the facts in order to get at the myth and the misogyny.
Well, you would think, but actually, you know, there's been a lot of positive reviews.
That's good.
As well there should be.
Including in the New York Times book review. It was just the daily that... was unfortunate, but you know where you see the attacks. It's always for a book I hadn't written.
Mm-hmm. Consistent.
Yeah, and it's consistently. It's always about. It's evaluating the book as if I had said that this was a book about what 9/11 did to women and how it set women back, which suggests that the reviewer did not get past page 13, where I say very clearly, this is not a book about what 9/11 did to women or men. This is a book about what 9/11 revealed about our cultural reflex, the mythology that we grasp every time we're in a time of crisis like this. So this isn't about something new. It's about something very old, very deeply ingrained in our culture.
And very dangerous, which is what makes this important.
Because look where we went. We went to, instead of honing a working military strategy, instead of making an actual effort to improve national security, we were fed adolescent fantasies about Amber Alerts and missions accomplished and evildoers crushed. It led to the erosion of our civil liberties. It led to government endorsements of torture. It led us into a war against a people who had not attacked us.
Well, and effectively, not only a government endorsement of of torture, but a public endorsement.
Right.
But no other than our silence.
There's been a very long, deeply disturbing silence, and you see signs of people. Certainly in the polls, and the public attitudes have dramatically shifted into opposition to the war, to dismay, to disgust with the Bush administration's performance. But you don't see a direct societal, widespread challenge. You don't see that critical mass out
yet
raising hell. Well,
and it's also important that you still have to ask the question, can we talk about 9/11 yet?
Right. And there are a lot of people who are not, you know, this is a sacred cow and we need to plaster it over with platitudes and you know, mantras that are meaningless about the end of irony or 9/11 changed everything, rather than have an honest discussion about this deeply traumatic, deeply important event in our history.
And the good news here is we do have that opportunity. So if we were to take that opportunity, what could we do with this?
Well, again, I go back to we first need to be willing to diagnose the myth before we can even change it. And, you know, I can see just in my experience with the some of the analyses of the book, as you were talking about, that there's a, you know, hear no evil, see no evil. We don't want to explore this. We don't want to even begin to interrogate our cherished fantasies. We want to, you know, crawl back into the cocoon of our frontier mythology. And so we need to be willing as a people to begin to distinguish between reality and fantasy, to be willing to live in vulnerability, to accept that that is part of being human, and to drop our cartoon, you know, cowboy swagger.
I've got to ask the magic wand question. You've been studying this, you've been writing about it, you've been thinking about it. Not only did the administration let us down, our media has let us down, as you document, and the opposition, nominal opposition, has let us down. Mm-hmm. You go on at some length about John Kerry and his Hunter Act in the last presidential election.
2004.
If you had your magic wand, can you see a way to begin to generate that conversation? It doesn't seem to want to come from the top down. Mm-hmm. Bottom up is extraordinarily difficult, but I'm, give me hope. give me the source
of
the direction.
That's a tall order. I don't have a formula for constituting effective action, but I think it begins with fighting the passivity that we have just fallen into as a society, that we are consumers more than citizens.
Spectators also, which
exactly.
is another part of that.
And 9/11 served that as well. You
right.
can sit back and watch it over and,
over and over again
and not do anything. And those people who wanted to do something, you talk eloquently about them.
The people who wanted to rush to volunteer and... Well, 9/11 was sort of... I mean, because it was such a catastrophic event, it just showcased our feelings of passivity, because what could you do? I mean, if the 95% of the people who died were unreachable. They were in the Twin Towers. They were above the fire line. If you were below the fire line, you walked out on your own 2 feet. So there wasn't, the desire. There was this great desire to rescue, to help, to be of service, but there was no way of acting on that. Certainly, that held true for everybody on the planes. And in a funny way, it's a metaphor for how we are as a consumer culture, where we sit back and watch. We're fed various ways of being sedated, but no way of acting. And I think what is needed is to get back to anger and agency.
Agency being that I can do something. I had a remarkable experience with Elizabeth Marshall Thomas, who, among other things, yes, she wrote The Hidden Life of Dogs, but more importantly, she is a practicing anthropologist, having lived among the people of the Kalahari, the Bush people, the first white family there. And we were in conversation about one of her extraordinary novels set in the Neolithic time. And I said to her, quite offhandedly, that she had made clear to me that humans' tools included not only rocks and stuff, but shame. And she just stopped and she said, shame as a tool. Yes. And you reinforced that sense with me. And it's in some ways speaks to Bill's question. Talk about the shame part of this and how one can get beyond that to what you call agency.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is why it was so important to understand the early foundations of our history, and to understand that out of that, those repeated attacks and failed rescues, came this deep well of shame that we papered over with this trumped up domestic drama of, rescuing male heroes and endangered and grateful and weak women. So part of the answer is dealing with shame in an honest way, instead of simply trying to, cover it over every time it rears its ugly head.
Go ahead, Bill.
The great American novel, Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, the great American, the source of the American myth is the Searchers, and you do what to me is a wonderful service in going through and documenting how many ways it's wrong, but in many ways it is diametrically wrong. Every lesson that is taken from what was nominally based on a true event, mm-hmm. is within between 160 and 190 degrees wrong, out mm-hmm. of phase with the reality of what happened. And again, it seems to me that part of the challenge is to tell the truth and to examine honestly the myths and their origins and their absolute disconnect, these ersatz myths in some ways, their absolute disconnect from reality.
Including the Searchers. Yeah, precisely. The Searchers is a classic example. The story which inspired the novel of The Searchers, which in turn inspired the movie, is the story of the real-life story of Cynthia Ann Parker, a young woman who was taken captive in the 1830s by Comanches from her family's Texas compound. There were a series of bungles and ineptitude that allowed this Indian raid to take place. Other Indians had actually come to the compound and warned the family and gave them the exact date and time. Which will ring a bell for those who remember August 2001 and the communique sent to Bush in Crawford, Texas, of Osama bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S. Nonetheless, on that exact day and time, most of the men went out to the fields. Cynthia Ann Parker's father was supposed to be guarding the compound. He forgot to load his gun. He didn't lock the door of the compound. So she and others were taken captive. She wound up marrying. She spent 25 years living with the Comanches. She married one of the leading warriors and had three children, one of whom, Quanah Parker, became the last leader of the Comanches. And she did not want to come back. And her rescue was forced. Over and over again, they tried to get her to come back. She wouldn't. And ultimately, in a bloody scene that recalls the My Lai Massacre, the Texas Rangers seized her, killed all of it was a group of women and children, but took her because they saw her blue eyes, forced her to go back to her family, which she did not want to do. And ultimately, she wasted away, stopped eating, and died of a combination of starvation and illness. And this is the story that inspired John Wayne saving Natalie Wood, who is eternally grateful.
And the other part of that, of course, is the John Wayne character, the real person, is about as unappealing, dishonest, a thief, relatively wealthy, but largely probably misbegotten. But just
and to be fair to John Ford, I mean, the Searchers is a very complex movie, and you can see aspects every time I see it, I see something different. You can see aspects of the Wayne character, Ethan Edwards, being a stone cold killer, not being valorized. But in our cultural imagination, that's the average person who thinks of John Wayne and thinks of those westerns thinks of him as a hero.
Subtlety goes away, right.
The best thing you can say is a bounty hunter. I mean, that's the most generous description of the actual incarnation of this so-called hero.
Right. The actual figure who became the John Wayne character was, he was actually suspected of murder, among other things. It was hardly a laudable character.
Not a role model.
No.
Susan Faludi will be back with us for a couple of minutes when we return in a moment. Be with us.